This is the official Euro 2024 podcast.
The match went deep into the night in Hamburg, but France have prevailed over Portugal on penalties to reach the UEFA Euro 2024 semi-finals. Elsewhere, the hosts Germany were beaten late by La Roja.
David Olmo,
Mikel Moreno! In the 120th minute, Mikel Moreno surely puts Spain into the semi-final. Yes, Spain march on thanks to that extra time winner. We'll review all of Friday's drama and look ahead to Saturday's quarterfinals, Switzerland, England, and Turkey against the Netherlands. Hello and welcome to the Euro Show. We're live moments after the full-time whistle where France's players in white and blue are dancing and celebrating their incredible shootout victory over Portugal. The French flag is being waved up in the stands. Didier Deschamps and his staff are dancing too. And one of the tournament favourites have beaten one of the others. Mbappe's France move on. Ronaldo's Portugal are out. Only one penalty was missed by João Félix. France held their nerve. With me, European football expert Kevin Hatchard and Alvaro Romeo. And France perfect for the spot in the end, Kev.
Yeah, they were. And you've just nailed it by saying that they held their nerve. That's absolutely what they did, because Portugal had big chances in the 90. They also pushed really hard in extra time. France finished the game with Griezmann having gone off, with Mbappe having gone off. There were big calls by Didier Deschamps, but he had in his mind what he wanted. Wanted players with energy who could keep that shape without the ball. And when it came to the penalties, we wondered who was going to be able to step up, who was going to be able to deal with the pressure. And I thought all of the French penalties were outstanding. And when you bear in mind that Diogo Costa, the Portuguese goalkeeper, had saved three in a row in the last 16 against Slovenia in that shootout, he wasn't able to save any. And that wasn't down to him, that was down to the quality of the penalties.
And I think that the last goal, Theo Hernandez, is a super goal. I mean, he took it with such a composure to send France to the semi-finals of the tournament. I think that it's been a good game, competitive. France is very rocky, we know about that. Portugal found it difficult to score against them. They didn't, in fact. And I do believe that one of the images of the game is going to be that hug that Pepe and Cristiano Ronaldo are having now on the pitch. Maybe saying goodbye to this tournament forever, who knows? But, you know, it's very emotional, and Cristiano Ronaldo is in tears again.
It's an incredible scene, that Pepe, 41, and Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, still playing at nearly 40, and them embracing each other. They've been through so much and given so much to their country. I mean, you think of all of the goals that Ronaldo has scored in this tournament alone, let alone in World Cups and other competitions. And they did themselves proud. I know that Ronaldo didn't score, but he kept on going. He kept on leading the line. Pepe, at times, you can't believe he's 41. I mean, there was a moment in the game where Marcus Thuram seemed to have the run on him. And Marcus Thuram's pretty quick. He's a lot younger than Pepe. And Pepe somehow kept pace with him, took control of that situation. So they have given everything they can give. It was just too very well organized teams. I think the coaches deserve credit, actually. Didier Deschamps and Roberto Martinez, two very well organized sides. There wasn't much to choose between.
A reminder, we're live every match night of the competition, or you can listen to this show later as the official Euro 2024 podcast. And we want you to get in touch on the day's action via X. Message us at Euro 2024. So it finished Portugal 0, France 0, France prevailing 5-3 on penalties. Earlier in the day, Spain beat Germany by 2-1.
Yes, and it was one of those games that will go straight into the museum of Spanish football history, because at the end of the day, Spain beat the host, Germany, with a heroic goal from Mikel Merino, just when we all thought that there will be a penalty shootout. It wasn't easy. I believe that Germany had many chances, also to kill it off, but Spain stayed in the game. They prevailed, and as I said before, it was one of those goals from Mikel Merino, one of those that Spain will remember forever, a little bit like the goals that Fabregas scored in a penalty shootout against against Italy in this very tournament in 2008, or that lovely goals that Spain scored in a final, 4-0 against Italy in 2012. I mean, I believe that Spain showed again that they've got not only a very strong lineup, but also like four or five or six footballers that come out from the bench and they can make the difference too and change the game.
Yeah, and I think what they showed is that even when Nico Williams went off, Lamine Yamal went off, and there's been so much praise sent their way, rightly so, they still had players who could come on and make a difference. Merino comes on, obviously not in a wide position, but in midfield. He's able to make that really intelligent run. The irony here is that Pedri was injured very early on in the game. And the guy who comes on for him, Dani Olmo, scores a goal and makes a goal. So it shows the depth they have. Just on the Germany point of view, I do think they've done themselves proud in the competition. I think the way that they played, the chances they made, the style of football Julian Nagelsmann has been able to imprint on this group in just a few months, I think gives them a lot of hope going forward.
We'll react more to the earlier game in the day shortly, but first let's start our full analysis in Hamburg, where Portugal took on France, and it was this moment that decided the tie.
Theo Hernandez to take France into the semi-final of Euro 2024. France have done it!
Yeah, that was it. Theo Hernandez kick after the one penalty miss for Portugal from João Félix. They didn't get to take their fifth kick in the end, Portugal, because it was done and dusted. But let's go through the match as best we can. Kevin Alvaro, starting with the team selection, no surprises. Roberto Martinez, in terms of his 11, said, I want to go with the same team. I want that continuity. France did have to make a couple of changes, and one of the big calls was Randall Colo Muani to start.
Yeah, Colo Muani instead of Marcus Thuram, and then Camavinga started as well, because there was a suspension from Javier. And I believe that, France show again that they know how to stay solid in the game. I think that the game wasn't particularly brilliant because Portugal tried to have most of the ball. At times they could try to create chances, but France can resort to the individual brilliance of some footballers they've got just to solve many situations. For me, this is the best thing about France. Not only that they believe in what they are doing, but everyone knows that they are quite decent at football. All the players know that they are very good. Their teammates are very good as well. And there is a confidence resulting out of that. French player knows that they can believe in the players they've got next to them, and also they can solve situations when the moment gets rough. I remember, for example, in the game against Belgium, just Theo Hernandez just running, sprinting 40 meters just to tackle Yannick Carrasco. And today we have seen that with the many defensive blocks that the French defense were doing. Many times Portugal took shots from the box, but the French defenders were well positioned, they blocked it, and it looked like it was impossible to score a goal against them. And on top of that, there is a French goalkeeper like Mike Maignan, who has been gaining confidence as the tournament went by, and he did a couple of really good saves today, one to Vitinha in the second half, and then during the penalty shootout, I believe that he was somehow key, making sure that João Félix sent it to the post, because he guessed where the ball was going to and he was going to reach that ball anyway. If the ball hadn't hit the post, I think that Mike Maignan would have saved it.
I think one of the really interesting things about the first half was that Portugal had clearly recognised that Jules Koundé against Belgium was an outlet from that right back position, getting forward and trying to dovetail with Griezmann when he was moving out to that right hand side. So the best way to deal with that is you don't let him get out. So you pin him by getting Rafael Leao really high up, and then you get Nuno Mendes, who I thought was the player of the match, to support him. And time again, they created those overloads, made it really difficult for Koundé to get out. He needed help, so he was trying to get N'Golo Kanté to come across and help him out. And you're absolutely right, Alvaro, about Mike Maignan, because it's been coming for a while. Obviously, Hugo Lloris was the undisputed number one for a long time. It's one thing to get the job. It's another one to excel in that job. And I think on numerous occasions in numerous games now, he has really saved them when they've needed it. And having that security is a really big thing. Portugal have it with Diogo Costa as well.
And there are players in France who look in this kind of tournaments almost infallible, really. It's like they are safe on the ball, and then they go for the duels and they tend to win pretty much all of them. I mean, today I have seen Camavinga winning endless duels in this game, Tchouameni as well, N'Golo Kanté. I mean, this is, at the end of the day, something that's very eroding for the opponent, to know that no matter how good you do, it's very likely that the French footballer will do a last-ditch defending thing and will prevent you from scoring. I think that this is the most annoying thing about playing against France. And I heard Kevin De Bruyne a week ago speaking about that as well and saying, you don't know how good these guys are. And the truth is that maybe this French side is not the most creative one. In fact, the most creative outlet is Antoine Griezmann, and he was, you know, he went on the bench in the extra time or in the second half, I don't remember exactly when. But still, the team remains rocky, remains solid, and they keep on winning games. I mean, maybe not in the nicest way, but they won it tonight as well.
Deschamps is the key to the whole thing for me because he's been in charge for such a long time. And with that comes that natural authority. And he knows that people at home will say, why did he pick this lineup? Why aren't they more attacking? They've got all of this quality. But A, he doesn't care and publicly says, I don't care about that criticism. It doesn't give me a problem. Not that he doesn't care in the sense that he's, you know, he's passionate about the job, but he's very serene. He's very focused. And all of that outside noise that you get with favourites for tournaments, he can just make that all dissipate. And if he takes that on his shoulders, the players then take that lead and don't get crushed flat by the pressure of it either. So he's very, very good at that, at transmitting that serenity to his players and making big calls. Antoine Griezmann has been arguably their most important player in the Deschamps reign. Well, he went off before the 90. Mbappe is the superstar of the team and he went off halfway through extra time. Now, that is a coach who is willing to be bold and take those risks regardless of the backlash he would get if it goes wrong.
I wonder if he's actually kind of the international manager Carlo Ancelotti kind of guy now.
I think so.
And I think the interesting bold decision with some of these subs as well was it did seem likely that penalties was coming. Neither team was fashioning loads of opportunities. And when it came to the shootout, we were saying to ourselves, right, Who's going to take these penalties for France? The penalty takers were not obvious, and yet they went 5 for 5.
Well, obviously, he's got all the information and all the data about who is good at penalties. That's number one. But number two, I believe that there is a certainty, a confidence in the French camp that extends to the manager as well. I was talking before about the players knowing that the teammate alongside them is very good, therefore they can trust that player, you know, to do things. But the song, I think that after winning the World Cup and after getting France to a World Cup final in 2022, he knows that pretty much he's got nothing to lose anymore, so he can make these decisions. I think that he will go back in time as one of the French legends. So I think that he's got the authority to drop Mbappé before a penalty shootout. If this manager, Didier Deschamps, was somebody new in management or in the job, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Ousmane Dembélé, by the way, came off the bench, ended up being player of the match, given the difference he made off the bench and the fact he converted his penalty. From a Portugal point of view, and I think Cristiano Ronaldo said he's aware this is his last Euro, because it's another 4 years, he's 39. And I think we could see from, you know, we talked about it, the reaction from him and Pepe. I mean, Pepe would be 45 at the next Euro, that it's the last time we'll see these two in this tournament, which is incredible.
Isn't it incredible that you wouldn't necessarily rule out Pepe rocking up at 45?
Chasing a 20-year-old Lamine Yamal down the byline.
Exactly. I think what's really interesting about what Roberto Martinez has done is that when he got the job, it would have been politically easier in some ways for him to say, look, Cristiano Ronaldo's done an incredible job for this country. But because Fernando Santos had taken the leap and played Gonçalo Ramos ahead of him in that World Cup game against Switzerland, which they won, and Gonçalo Ramos played really well, Martinez could have legitimately come in and did that. He didn't do that. He went completely the opposite way. And he went, look, this is a legend of our sport. This is an incredible player in Portugal's present and history. Why would I not use him? So he got bucket loads of goals in the qualifiers for the Euro. And yes, he didn't score in the tournament, but he was, you know, their focal point in attack, and he has all that experience. Same with Pepe. They've got some great players coming through. You know, Antonio Silva's arguably the next big
thing. They're not short in either position, are they?
No, really? It would have been really easy to say, look, we're trying to move on. But he wanted to win this, and the best route to do that is to have these guys with all of that experience. I think Roberto Martinez has shown in this tournament he can be trusted to take this group on to the next level, because they've got some really good young players coming through, and yet they've still got a lot of experience in there as well.
We'll try and get some reaction to this game later on in the show, but it is France who march on once again. Next, we'll get stuck in today's other quarterfinal tie.
Cardiac arrest can happen to anyone. On a football pitch, at work, but most often at home.
CPR can save lives.
Get trained now.
Learn the skills to save lives. Visit get-train.com.
Well, what a day at UEFA Euro 2024. From one massive game to another. From the north of Germany to the south, the hosts took on the only side left in the tournament with a 100% record, Spain.
Yamal, the next generation. That's it! Dani Olmo! Spain strike early in the second half. So many white shirts to aim for. Kimmich at the back post, that's it! Sparks fly in Stuttgart! Germany refuse to say farewell to Euro 2024! Dani Olmo, Mikel Moreno! In the 120th minute, Mikel Moreno! Semi-final!
He certainly did. We thought we were headed for penalties again, but it was done before that was necessary. A 2-1 Spain win in extra time. You heard Conor McNamara on commentary there, and he was alongside the former England international, Andy Hinchcliffe, and he joins us now. Andy, good evening.
Good evening.
Andy, what an ending. Were Spain deserving winners, do you think?
Oh, I'm not so sure. I think it was the game we anticipated. We knew it was going to be incredibly close. I think probably Spain had more of the game plan. I think they're a bit more slicker with the ball, the way they passed and moved. And I think Germany basically had to throw everything at them, and they got their equaliser. And in extra time, it could have gone either way, the chances that Germany missed. But they just seemed to have, Spain, that extra touch of quality. I think we saw it with both their goals, well-constructed goals. Dani Olmo was outstanding. Coming on as an early substitute, he was quite brilliant.
Well, let's talk about Dani Olmo, because obviously it was a setback in the first place when Pedri had to come off injured.
Yeah, I really felt for him. Obviously, Toni Kroos has decided to try and pinch a ball, and he's colliding with Pedri, and you can see he was heartbroken. Let's just hope he's okay and available for the semi-final. But this is, again, why, even though you're not in the starting 11, you look at Dani Olmo, you look at Mikel Moreno, who actually won the game, both substitutes, both attacking midfielders. Well, it's not about starting games. It's not about being the central striker. It's about, can you influence a game? And I think it's testament to those two players, their professionalism and the way they applied themselves when they were given their opportunity. And I thought Olmo in particular scored one, made one, got player of the match. He was quite brilliant, but off the bench, and that takes some doing.
Did you think it was headed for penalties?
I did before a ball was kicked. I just thought they're so close. I can hardly separate the two teams. I was really struggling to pick a winner when it went to extra time. I was surprised how both sides went for it. I thought the game would tighten up and it would go to penalties. But just again, that extra lack of, the bit of lack of defensive work from Rudiger gets caught ball watching. He's probably tired again. You're late into extra time. And just that quality that Olmo brought and Marina brought was the difference ultimately. But yeah, if not for that, we go to penalties and anything could happen. But at least we got a winner before penalties. I know the German fans and players will say it's horrendous, we'd rather go to penalties, but the game was won in 120 minutes, which I think we didn't probably expect. We all expected penalties before the game started.
And you were in the stadium and it was mainly German support in Stuttgart. Can you describe the moment, the feeling in the stadium when Mika Moreno headed in what was the winner?
Well, the feeling when Viet scored the equaliser, I'd say there isn't a roof on the stadium, but if that had been, it would have come off. It was extraordinary, the relief of the German fans that finally they got the goal they've been pushing for so late in the day. But yeah, I think they were, again, yeah, probably three quarters of the ground was German fans. So they were, again, they were just completely stunned. They knew it was too late in the day to probably respond. And the Spanish, you know, fans behind that goal as well, which was crazy, wasn't it? They scored the winning goal at the Spanish end as well. And the relief, I just think it's relief more than anything else. As a fan, of course you want to win. You're desperate not to lose. But I don't think they probably expected what happened to happen. They probably even know they got some good players, but they probably thought this is just going to peter out and head into penalties. So to get that late goal inside the stadium, it was so quiet for three quarters of it, and it just exploded the other quarter of the stadium, and just the relief that you got to the semi-finals. And it was, again, it's just extraordinary. And again, what fans, I presume, come to football matches for. It's amazing for us to cover them in terms of the media. I played in big games at big stadiums. The atmosphere when you're watching on is nothing like it is on the pitch. It was absolutely incredible tonight.
And the other thing that you had the honour of witnessing tonight is Toni Kroos' final ever football match.
I know. It's such a... Yeah, it's so sad. He looked like he was going to have to come off. He was really struggling with a bit of an injury. But what a career he's had. And clearly not the way he wanted to go out. He wanted to win this title before he retired. But what a servant to club football and to international football Kroos has been. At the end of the game, the German fans were paying him their due. They know how important a player he's been. And he's just such an elegant footballer. I think he was gracious in defeat as well tonight, shaking the hands of the Spanish players. So what a professional, what an incredible footballer. But yes, sadly, his career has come to an end now.
And Andy, final one. Is Spain the team to beat, do you think?
Absolutely. I thought whoever wins tonight's game has to be favourites to pick up the trophy, because they are the two best teams, the two top scorers. They've just got game plans there, which are pretty evident as well. And I think we saw tonight that Spain, even when they're pegged back, have the resilience to go again. And that's exactly what they did. So again, if you're any other team playing them, you've got a real problem, because how do you beat them? Because they don't lie down. They play some great football, score some great goals. They seem to have a bit of everything. They will be missing a few players, though, for that semi-final. So that's going to be a fascinating game as well. But absolutely, I think even before the game, we thought Spain were the team to beat. Now they've done what they've done tonight under great pressure with a lot of German support there. I think they've shown they've got resilience and character, as well as being a fantastic football team.
Andy, really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you. Take care.
The former England international Andy Hinchcliffe from Stuttgart. Match winner Mikel Moreno has spoken to our reporter Graham Hunter and has talked us through that moment at the end.
It was a thousand things in 1 millisecond. When I saw Danny had the ball, I knew he had a lot of quality and he was going to put an amazing cross. So I believed in him, in his quality. I make the run behind Rudiger's back, and the ball was just perfect. I only had to make the run, jump, and coordinate the header. And the rest, I think, is history. I'm really, really happy. It was the reward we deserved. And well, now for the next.
Right to praise Danny Olmo as well for the quality of that delivery. Kev Hatchard and Alvaro Romeo with me, Rob Daly on the Euro Show. Alvaro, who is Mikel Moreno?
Mikel Merino is the son of Miguel Merino. And the reason why today he celebrated his goal like this and running around the corner flag is because his dad celebrated the goal like this, former professional, when he was playing for Osasuna in a game against Stuttgart. So today, Mikel Merino, around 33 years after that celebration of his dad, he decided to celebrate in the same way. He's a footballer that he has become important in Spain as the years went by. I think that he had never had a cathartic moment with the national side until today, because to date, before this goal, he had only scored one goal for the Spanish national side. But I will say that if Spain wants to keep the possession, if Spain wants to kill off the games, if Spain wants to bring some fresh legs in midfield, Mikel Merino will always be the option number one. If he doesn't start for the next game, because you never know, it could be the case that Luis de la Fuente changes a little bit his plans and he goes for three midfielders instead of a double pivot, and that will suit Mikel Merino. But yes, he's a phenomenal footballer and probably the player of more quality in Real Sociedad. And today, all his work and all his effort and all that has paid off. Mikel Merino has been a very important player in the youth ranks of Spain, like many others that are in the squad now. In fact, Luis de la Fuente referred to the likes of Oyarzabal, Merino, many more, Dani Olmo, Unai Simón, Fabian. They have all of them played for Luis de la Fuente, either in the under 19 team or the under 21. They've been loyal servants of the Spanish side. And I think Mikel Merino deserved this moment.
On Germany, Kev, how will they reflect on the game?
On the game, I think they'll be bitterly disappointed because even after Merino scores, Niklas Füllkrug has a difficult chance, but a chance, to force it to penalties and a header that was slightly behind him and he couldn't quite find the angle he needed to find the top corner and it went just wide with Unai Simón beaten. I think they'll be delighted with the way that they force their way back into it, because I think once the first goal goes in, the fear I think a lot of regular observers of this team had was that Germany would then chase the game. And the one thing that's been a concern is that they're open in transition. We know that. This is how they operate. They really take risks. Didn't work out that way, actually. They played their way into the game. They were solid in transition. Yes, they were always going to cough up chances, but they kept on creating chances. I think what was really impressive was that Julian Nagelsmann, I think, realised his team selection hadn't quite worked in the way he wanted it to. So he changed it. So Emre Can went off, Leroy Sané went off, Florian Wirtz came on, Robert Andrić came on, and it worked. And they looked better for it. So lots of positives to take in terms of the game. I thought it was Florian Wirtz's best performance by miles, actually, at the tournament. I know he got the opening goal, which seems a long time ago now on opening night. But since then, he's not sparkled in the way that he does for Leverkusen. But in this game, he did. I thought Kai Havertz was excellent as well with his movement. And, you know, we talked about bold substitutions with Didier Deschamps. He took the captain, Ilkay Gundogan, off fairly early in the piece as well. And that worked too.
You mentioned Kai Havertz there. Let's hear from him. He spoke after the match and gave us his thoughts on a blockbuster encounter in Stuttgart.
We can be proud. I think we deserve more today. It was a tough game. Could have been a final, I think, Spain against Germany. I think two best teams in the tournament so far. At the end, we are out, so obviously we are very sad. I think when you don't defend well for 1 second, they punish you straight away. That's what they did. After that, I think we deserved the goal, deserved even more, I think. And at the end, obviously, last minute, we concede another one. Football is tough sometimes. I think we all know it. And now it's time to recover, and obviously it's going to take some days.
Kai Havertz here on the tournament as a whole. How will they reflect on that, Kev?
I think they'll look back on this tournament with great positivity. And I think it was something that Germany as a national team really needed, because if you look at the last few tournaments, they've gone out in the group stage in the last two World Cups. At the last Euro, they were beaten at the first knockout stage by England. And that was a very painful defeat. And I think Julian Nagelsmann, having taken the job, experimented a bit. Took a while to get there, understandably. But from March, when they had the win in France, the win over the Netherlands, that's when this team has really started to come together. And I think now it has a recognisable style. It has a recognisable shape. I think you've got some incredible young players. But I think if you look at the intangibles, the most important thing here is that the German football public is proud of the group of players and it enjoys watching the team play. They went into this tournament excited about a home Euro, no doubt, but didn't really know how it was going to go, didn't know how Germany were going to perform. that opening night in Munich against Scotland was so important. Not just a big win, but the nature of the performance. And I think that gave them a platform, and they've really built on it very impressively. And Julian Nagelsmann's already talking about the World Cup in 2 years' time. He's not just talking about competing, he's talking about winning it. And that, I think, is where they've moved the needle.
Yeah, two of the best teams in the tournament. You could have seen this being the final in many ways in Berlin. But it is Spain who progress, Alvaro. And for their tie with France now, they're missing a number of key players, including Pedri after his injury.
Yeah, well, Pedri after his injury. And I think that Spain at times in the game was a little bit wasteful in the final third just because Pedri wasn't there. Because at times... Nico Williams, Lamine Yamal, Dani Olmo especially, and Alvaro Morata tended to take shots from difficult angles and difficult positions. With Pedri, the game would have been a little bit different. He won't be available for the semi-final against France. Neither Dani Carvajal. For me, this is the biggest absence of a Spanish team, because Dani Carvajal would be the logical person or the logical player to mark Kylian Mbappé. But just very quickly on Spain, in the same way that Germany can be proud of their performance, Spain too. Spain hasn't reached the semifinals of this tournament in four of the last five editions. I remember very well, Rob, Kevin, that from 1984 until 2008, Spain never progressed the quarterfinals. Never. And I remember that in Spain, we were all saying, this is the course of the quarterfinals. It was a sentence that was stuck in Spanish media for a reason. Ever since then, since 2008, Spain has done a massive leap forward. And I know that it was very difficult, the transition between the great generation to this one. But still, the fact that we beat Germany in the same way that Germany would have beaten us 30 years ago, just in the last minute, it means that Spain has progressed a lot. Footballistically, obviously, in a football sense, but also in a mental sense as well. You know that we have the resilience now to compete in this game, something that probably 25, 30 years ago we didn't have.
Spain will play France in Munich for a place in the final. Dani Olmo, the player of the match, and loads of you have been getting in touch on X. Yemi says, Moreno, the star of the match, mind-blowing scenes. Harsh Gautam says, what a header from Moreno, one of the best, most crucial goals of that tournament. That shot of him leaping in the air, both legs just sprayed out in separate directions as he headed the ball, will go down as one of the iconic images of this tournament. Okay, next, let's preview the tournament's other two quarterfinals now. Shortly, we'll look ahead to England versus Switzerland, but first to Berlin, as the Netherlands prepare to take on Turkey.
Marco driving on. Weghorst! What an introduction! Van Weghorst has eased the Netherlands in front.
This is Cody Gakpo. Up to that right foot of his! And pure power from Cody Gakpo! Puts the touch into dreamland in Munich. Daniel Malin wants to take it on himself. That's it. The Netherlands are going through to the quarterfinal of Euro 2024.
Tetajvili losing it. Ardo Guler now for Turkey.
Quarterfinals, a match winning save.
Yeah, incredible drama as Turkey beat Austria 2-1 and the Netherlands beat Romania 3-0 in the round of 16. Alvaro and Kev, quick thoughts on this match before we speak to our team reporters.
Well, I think Turkey have been a real credit to the tournament. I think of them as almost co-hosts because of the incredible local support they've had. If people didn't realise before this Euro that Germany has a vibrant and big Turkish population, they know now because they have been so supportive, such an important part of what they've done. On the pitch, I think it's been great to see guys like Arda Güler and Kenan Yildiz really perform well. Güler got that amazing goal against Georgia, but his performance against Austria was so mature because he was delivering these incredible set pieces. Without Hakan Çalhanoğlu, let's not forget, he was suspended for the game. So Arda Güler really stepped up in that moment. I think Vincenzo Montella, the coach, really deserves credit, knows Turkish football from his work in the country with Adana Demirspor at club level. He really gets, I think, Turkish football. I think he really understands the emotion of it and how important this team is to everyone. And tactically, he's got a few things right as well. So some really great displays. And the commentary of the Mert Günok save we heard there, I've been thinking ever since he made it, I can't think of a better save I've ever seen at international level. I know Gordon Banks, but even I'm not that old. So I genuinely think that was an incredible moment. And it's things like that that can actually really knit a group together.
It was a phenomenal save, that one. And I think that the best thing about Turkey is that they play very good transition football. So I think that the encounter can be fascinating. And I'm really looking forward to seeing not only Arda Güler, of course, but Cody Gakpo. I think that he's, and Xavi Simons, but Cody Gakpo's performance this tournament has been terrific. At Liverpool, at times, I think that he's a player that he doesn't feel like he's important, whereas in the Netherlands, he does, and he performs. And he's one of the top scorers of the tournament as well.
Oh, well, earlier in the day, we caught up with the Turkey correspondent, Aydin Güvenir, and our Netherlands reporter, Derek Brookman, and started by asking for a standout moment from their respective sides in this Euro so far.
I think the best moment of the Dutch campaign was the match in Munich on Tuesday.
Daniel Malen wants to take it on himself! That's it! Done and dusted! The Netherlands are going through to the quarterfinal of Euro 2024!
That was when stuff it really started coming together and they played the football that we all know they're capable of.
Aydin, what about you?
Of course, Mert Günok's magical save at the last second of the Austria game.
Baumgartner! Oh, what a save! What an extraordinary save! Mert Günok, in that moment, has taken Turkey to the cusp of the quarterfinals. A match-winning save!
And I can also say Mert Müldür's and Arda Güler's magnificent strikes in Georgia game.
Okay, Aydin, who is Turkey's most important player?
In my opinion, it's captain Hakan Çalhanoğlu.
But he's been beaten now, Hakan Çalhanoğlu.
The experience, the game knowledge, so Hakan Çalhanoğlu.
And who's the Iranian's key player, do you think, Derek?
I think I would have to say it's been Cody Gakpo.
This is Cody Gakpo. Up to that right foot of his! And pure power from Cody Gakpo!
He's really showing it all here. His goals have been so vital for the team, but every time he gets the ball, you just sense danger. So he's really been the guy that's making things happen for them.
Who's been the Dutch's unsung hero, would you say?
I would probably go for Stefan de Vrij, actually. I think he's been incredibly solid in defence, and he probably doesn't get as much exposure as say, his partner in defence, Virgil van Dijk, does. But de Vrij, he never lets you down, and he's also a real threat at the other end in set pieces and corners. So, yeah, I would go for him.
And who's that player for Turkey, do you think, Aydin?
Ferdi Kadıoğlu, left back, in my opinion, because he is really hard worker. He supports in every attack, make his runs, dribblings. I just made an interview with Captain Hakan Çalhanoğlu and midfielder Salih Özcan, and I asked also their favorite players in the tournament. They both say Ferdi is a magnificent player. So I can say Ferdi Kadıoğlu.
Well, you just mentioned him there. Let's hear from Ferdi Kadıoğlu.
It's really a dream, but without dreaming, you cannot have success. So yeah, it's going to be a very important game tomorrow. We prepared very well. We analyzed them, the weak points, the strong points. And for me, it's a very special match. My mom is Dutch, my father is Turkish. So for our family, it's going to be very special. But I want to win. I want to go to the semi-final, and we will fight hard to reach that goal.
As a player who knows Dutch football very well, what kind of approach do you think the Netherlands will have on the field tomorrow?
Yeah, the Netherlands, they like to have the ball, good in possession with the ball. I think they're going to try to make spaces and let us run. We have to be compact and be calm and patient, and then it will be all right.
Ferdi Kadiolu there. Okay, final question for you both, starting with you, Derek. Who is going to reach the semi-finals?
I've got to go for my boys. I think the way they played against Romania showed just exactly what they can do. And if they can repeat that tomorrow, then I don't think Turkey can handle that, to be honest. So I'll go for 3-1.
Aydin, what do you think?
I am expecting, like previous game, both teams will score. And probably it will be decided in extra time or a penalty shootout.
And
I hope, it's open to everything. But Turkey showed that they can manage these stressful moments. But the opponents are very experienced and very talented. So I'm in the middle. I can say that.
I'm taking that as 5-1 to Turkey. Aydin, thank you very much. Derek, thanks to you too. Enjoy the game.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you very much. You too.
Our Turkey correspondent Aydin Güvenir and Dutch reporter Derek Brookman speaking to me earlier in the day. Let's get some reaction from the Netherlands camp. Now, one man familiar with some of the opposition due to his club teammate is Denzel Dumfries. He's been speaking of the challenge his side face.
Against Romania, we analyzed before that there was a lot of space behind their defense, especially on the sides. I think that we did good. The plan worked. Unfortunately, we were not that precisely with our chances. But you saw that the intention that we had. So for me, you have always to look at the game, the moments when you can go, when you cannot go. You have to, make a balance. But I like to go, yes.
Obviously, you know, Çalhanoğlu, you play with him at Inter, and there's a couple of other players. I saw Çelik for AS Roma and Yıldız at Juventus. How well do you know these guys, and how well do you know the Turkish team in general?
Yeah, of course, Hakan I know very well. He's like a brother for me. Since the moment I came to Inter, he helped me with everything. Our families are friends. So Hakan I know very well. And also the other players that play in the Serie A, I know very well. And we played a few times also against the Turkish team before. I'm familiar with the Turkish team.
He was so advanced the other day in that victory over Romania, Denzel Dumfries. I'm sure we'll see him get forward again. Some questions, Kevin Alvarez, to who will play in attack?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when you look at the options that Ronald Koeman has. And I think one of the guys that, even though he's not, you know, a striker necessarily or even a winger, but a very attack-minded player, is Xavi. Because he's had an incredible season for RB Leipzig. I've commentated on him a lot in the season just gone. And Ronald Koeman, to start with, was not overly critical of him, but would say he still has a lot to learn. He's a young player. He's still developing. After the Romania game, he said he was the absolute best player on the pitch. So he's clearly won Koeman over, full of imagination, full of assists, full of enjoyment of the game. Really exciting player.
Well, I believe that Gakpo, Xavi and Memphis will start. But one thing that the Netherlands has, and it is a blessing for Ronald Koeman, is the fact that they can change the game from the bench. Malen came from the bench against Romania, scored 2 goals. Wout Weghorst, he has scored 1 goal in the tournament as well, and he offers that physical presence that, for example, Argentina couldn't do with during the World Cup. So I think that that's the best thing about the Netherlands, that there are many options on the bench. And whoever plays up front brings a different profile of player. Malen is fast. Weghorst is physical. Memphis is a great shooter. So all these things combined with Xavi's passing and Cody Gakpo's clear eye for goal makes the Netherlands a very dangerous side.
Okay, still to come, we'll look ahead to England versus Switzerland.
Few major competitions do more than the Euros to ensure their benefits last far beyond the final tournament. Since 2004, our hat-trick programme has been distributing 2/3 of every Euro's net revenue across Europe's 55 football associations to fund development projects. These benefits touch every level of the football pyramid. In communities, it pays for mini pitches, grassroots club development, football in schools, and disability football projects. At the top, Hattrick has helped associations build more than 60 stadiums and training centres. Euro 2024 will build on more than 800 projects already delivered over 20 years of Hattrick. Over the next 4 years, 935 million euros of the tournament's revenue will help leave a lasting legacy across the continent.
Okay, to Dusseldorf next on the Euro Show, where England face Switzerland in Saturday's other quarterfinal. Walker again looking to set him free, and this time he has snuck in behind the back, and it's a swift challenge in, and England score! It's Jude Bellingham! It's getting pretty desperate for England now. Slovakia so close to a famous win, and England get the equaliser! Jude Bellingham's done it! He's pulled it out of the bag, right at the end of the game! Met by Dubravka, sent goalwards again, headed across, Kane's there, 2-1 England! Oh, what a turnaround here in Gelsenkirchen! Polo sniffing around, he's lost his boot, but kept his composure to ensure that the Swiss are off to a winning start at the Euro.
Vargas. Oh, what a super hit! Remo Freuler! It's everything that Switzerland deserve! Vargas! Oh, beauty! That is a Swiss diamond! Barely half a minute into the second half, and they have climbed most of the mountain into the quarterfinals of Euro 2024.
Switzerland with that incredible result over Italy, although not entirely unexpected in the end of the round of 16. We'll focus on them shortly and get the latest on Granit Xhaka's injury. But let's start with England after their dramatic extra time win over Slovakia. Alvaro Romeo and Kev Hatcher with me on the Euro Show. Reports are, and we know that Mark Gay is out, isn't he? Suspended, of course, the Crystal Palace defender. That England are going to switch formation, potentially, to three at the back, Alvaro.
Well, if it works, so be it. I think that England needed a little bit of a reset. The goal from Jude Bellingham can be a turning point in the tournament. And one thing that England has to be very worried of is that Slovakia and Switzerland are going to be totally different. Switzerland is going to invade your own half. Switzerland will try to play. Switzerland is going to try to dominate the game. Slovakia didn't do that much against England. And I believe that, if this is the right thing to do, switching to a three centre-back defence, as I said before, let's see how it works. But in the game against Slovakia, I could see clearly that England can be deadly in set pieces, very dangerous. There is no shame in doing that. I mean, if England has to play long balls and resort to set pieces to win the game, they will have to do it. They will have to do it. It's going to be difficult, of course, because the centre-backs of Switzerland have been very impressive. Schär, Ricardo Rodriguez, Akanji, the three of them have been very confident, very sure, very compact together. But I do believe that this game is going to be totally, totally different to the game we saw between Italy and Switzerland and between England and Slovakia. It's a totally different clash.
When England reached the Euro final and started that Euro final, Kev, it was three at the back. And it was also Mount and Sterling at the time playing off Kane in relatively central positions. Could this get the best out of Foden and Bellingham, both playing as 10s off of Harry Kane after Bellingham's unbelievable goal the other night?
100%. Because if you look at Phil Foden, he does his best work through the middle, I think. And I think what it does is it removes that. When you play him on the left, his natural instinct is to drift in field. Well, Jude Bellingham wants to operate in those areas as well. So you don't really have to think about it so much. And we've actually seen it work really well for Germany when you've had Jamal Musiala and Florian Wirtz in those 10 positions, and they can link up and they can circulate and they can pull defenders out of position. I like this for England because I think it's something they've played a lot before, as you've alluded to. So Gareth Southgate said, look, we can switch between the two. It's not a big problem for us. It's not going to be jarring for the players. I think it gives them more balance. I think it gives them a bit more security as well to have the extra centre-back. But actually, most importantly for this particular game, what it could do if it works is it pins back Abisher on one side and Vidmar on the other. And it gives them something to think about, because what the Swiss have done so, so well against Germany and then against Italy is they've been able to have that high press, especially in wide areas. Well, that's a bit more difficult to do if you've got three centre-backs building up and you've got the options of getting the wing-backs up high. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it gets more out of the players that England have. But, you know, for all the talk of England not clicking, not hitting top gear, they've reached this stage. They have world-class players. Harry Kane has scored. Jude Bellingham scored a couple of really important goals. You know, some of these guys came into this tournament having had the most amazing seasons at club level. They've always got that quality to fall back on.
And the defence is good. In my opinion, this is very important. I mean, if you want to win a tournament, and Didier Deschamps always says the same thing, you have to have a good defence. And England has it, believe it or not. I don't know how this is going to work, as I said before, three centre-backs, but history says that this has worked for England, right?
Let's hear from the England boss, St. Gareth Southgate.
You know, I think the players have improved a lot as the tournament's gone on. We had total control of the game against Slovakia without creating as many clear-cut chances, but that was also credit to the way they defended. So we've, of course, had some days back on the training pitch, and now we've got to put it into practice.
You've experienced quarterfinals both as a player and as a manager. What, in your opinion, is the more nerve-wracking experience?
Playing is the hardest thing. You know, to cross the white line is the most challenging in terms of having to deliver in the moment and everything it involves. So, yeah, my job now is just to guide them and steer them and support them, really.
Our reporter Joe Terry with the questions to Gareth Southgate. Let's focus on Switzerland now and get the latest from their camp with reporter Anna-Sophia Vollmerhausen in Düsseldorf. Anna-Sophia, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thank you. What's the latest with Granit Xhaka, the key Switzerland midfielder?
He did train individually at the start of the week, just having some adductor issues. There was that moment in the Italy game kind of early on when he sat down, but he was able to continue and said the day after that it was just the after effects of what's been a pretty long season for him. So they kind of took it easy at the start of the week. But as the head coach said today, he's fully fit, able to play, which is obviously a big boost to Switzerland.
Why is he so important?
I think it's just when you look at how Switzerland plays, so much of it comes through him. He's always looking. He's always willing to help out. Sometimes you'll find him next to Akanji at centre back almost when they need an extra person back. But then he's just as quick to move up the other end and help someone attack. Even in the last game, that goal in the second half, I think 27 seconds into it, it came also because Xhaka just told Vargas to just shoot because he saw that he was in a good spot, and he did exactly that and scored a beautiful goal. So I think from that, and he gives a lot of instructions that really help his teammates as well.
Well, let's hear some of your interview with the Swiss head coach Murray Yakin about the expectations on his side.
It's a big game for us, that's true, and now we are in a good performance, and we want to give everything tomorrow in this game, the quarterfinal. For us, it's clear. England is the favorite in this game, and now we have a good moment in our side, and we hope we can show that in the game.
And obviously, for Switzerland, there's the chance of reaching the semi-finals for the first time ever. Does that give you any extra motivation, or does it make the game more special?
Of course, the expectation is big, and we are here, and we want to give our best in this game, and. Of course, we want to go in the semi-final, but now tomorrow is a big game for us as well, for each one and for our nation in Switzerland. And that's why we are happy, and we're looking forward.
Anna-Sophia, could you give us an idea of what it would mean for the people of Switzerland to beat England and reach a first semi-final?
I think it would be huge. I mean, obviously, Switzerland is one of the smaller countries at the Euros. I mean, over the last years, they've been extremely consistent at big tournaments, but they've always kind of fallen at this stage. So So for them to make history, especially on the back of all the strong performances they've put in so far, I mean, they're facing a really big country for the third game in a row. They've had Germany, Italy, and now England. So I think just on the back of that, to be able to really continue their journey here by knocking out another strong side or another pre-tournament favorite, at least, would be really something special for them.
You've spoken about how relaxed the group are, how confident the group are, it seems, when you're around the players. To what extent do you think those victories against big nations, and I'm including France in 2021, Italy in the round of 16 this year, what do you think they've done to help that aspect of the group?
I think it really just grows that self-belief that they have, from what I heard as well after the game against Italy. They were obviously celebrating out on the pitch with the fans, but then went straight into the dressing room after, and the focus was already on the next game. It was very much the feeling of, we haven't achieved anything yet, we want to keep going. And so I think these successes that they've had against bigger countries really have just, as a group, made them into a really tight-knit unit, one that just wants to keep achieving and doing the best they can.
Anna Sophia, great insight. Thanks for coming on the show as always.
Thanks for having me.
Anna Sophia Vollmerhausen there, the winners of England, Switzerland and Turkey versus the Netherlands will meet in Dortmund in the semi-finals. A reminder that today, Spain and France set up the first semi-final of UEFA Euro 2024. Naeem has been in touch on X at Euro 2024. Well played, France. Congratulations. Theo Hernandez, Mike Maignan, well played, over the moon. They were two of the stars on the night in Hamburg. Alva Romero and Kev Hatcher with me this evening. Final word, who's going to complete the semi-final lineup?
I'm going to go with the Netherlands because I think they'll cause Turkey all kinds of problems on the counter. And England are going to beat Switzerland on penalties. It's going to be ridiculously close all the way through, and England will sneak through.
I'm going to go for the Netherlands because their best performance came very fittingly in the last 16 round, so they are improving. And I'm going to go for Switzerland. I'm sorry, guys. England has the best players, but Switzerland has been better than their opponent in the four games they have played in the Euro. Even better than Germany, I believe.
Yeah, no,
so
I agree.
I'm gonna back Switzerland to go to the semi-finals.
Gents, great stuff tonight as always. And thank you at home for listening as well. A reminder, you can tune into us live every match night, moments after the final game. You can do so on the Euro 2024 app and at Euro2024.com. So around 11 p.m. CST, unless we have extra time and penalties, as we did tonight. And the show's available as the official podcast. We'll be back Saturday evening to review England, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Turkey. Look ahead to our two semi-finalists as well. Spain and France are already there. My thanks to Alvaro and Kevin. We'll be back next time.
Thank you for listening to the official Euro 2024 podcast, an IMG production for UEFA.